Welcome to our radio show,
Faithful to the Truth, with Oksana Eliahu, who is a Russian-born Jewish believer, a Messianic recording artist who lived in Israel for 20 years. Yeshua said, "I am the way, and the truth, and the life." The common denominator of our radio show is to always remain faithful to the truth. Yeshua is the truth, and He is our main topic and reason for this radio show. We share music, testimonies, interviews, Bible teachings. We ask questions and try to find the answers together with our guests and with you, our listeners.
So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Welcome to Faithful to the Truth radio show with Oksana Eliahu.
Shalom.
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 Today we are in Omaha, Nebraska, and our good friend Rabbi Nate Seidelbach is here with us. And we have some questions for him. Hello, Rabbi Nate.
Shalom.
Shalom.
How are you?
Shalom.
Shalom. Nice to see you here. Thank you for coming.
We
heard, it's 92 degrees outside.
Yeah.
Very
good.
Hot.
Yeah, nice. So what we would like to hear today is your story. We understood that...
My testimony.
Yeah, your testimony.
Sure.
So again, whatever you start with your background or whatever,
okay.
We are looking forward, and I hope it would be... very, very interesting for our listeners as well.
You bet. Yeah, sure. Do you want me to start now then?
Sure, yes.
Okay.
Let's go.
Shalom, everyone. And it's nice to be here. Thank you for having me on your show. I always start my testimony by talking about the night I was sleeping, and it was my 42nd birthday. And I had a nightmare. I dreamt that I'm turning 42 years old and I'm going to die.
Wow.
And the reason that I thought that was that Elvis Presley died when he was 42 years old, and Elvis Presley's father died when he was 42 years old. Now, I am not related to Elvis Presley, you know, but I just knew in my heart that I was going to die that year also. And we'll get back to that later. But I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, in a conservative Jewish home. I was raised by my grandmother and grandfather who came over from Poland, the old country, and they spoke mostly Yiddish, not too much English. My grandmother was blind, and my grandfather was a cantor in the synagogue, as well as being a tailor. And so he also sang in opera. So he had a very beautiful voice. And so they were raising me. We lived in Brooklyn, New York, and in a second floor apartment right by the elevated subway train. So it was very noisy all the time. And I would sit out on the fire escape and yell at the trains and have fun and throw things at the people downstairs. So that's how I spent my first 8 years of my life. We had a small apartment, but we also had my two aunts live there too. They were not married yet.
So you were not a religious Jew?
Well, grandfather took me to the synagogue with him. And so it was just two blocks away. And we learned, you know, I learned all the things from my grandfather.
But did you really believe in God?
Well, I wasn't even 8 years old yet.
Oh,
so
I see.
So I'll get to that in a minute. When I was 8 years old, one of the aunts got married and we moved to another part of Brooklyn. And, when we got there, so we were living with them, my grandmother, grandfather, the two aunts and, you know, her new husband, and we were all living in that house. And then she had a baby boy and then a baby girl later on. So they were like my brother and sister, even though I was an only child. And they, when I was 8 years old, they took me to the Hebrew school and enrolled me in Flatbush Park Jewish Center. And it was conservative synagogue. And I started learning my Hebrew school stuff and, you know, preparing for my bar mitzvah in 5 years. Even though my grandfather was a cantor in the synagogue and observant, and we always did Passover at home and all that stuff, and we did all those things, my family, his children, were very secular. And so we didn't observe. They didn't observe. But I had to go to Hebrew school. And so after my bar mitzvah, I felt that I was, why should I go to synagogue if no one else in the family was going? So I quit going. And the neighborhood we lived in Brooklyn was a Irish and Italian neighborhood. We were probably the only Jewish family there. And so, you know, I even my friends would persecute me a little bit. You know, they all went to the Catholic school down the street, and I had to go to public school 2037 blocks away. So that was my childhood. I left my faith after my bar mitzvah. I just kind of wandered through high school and, you know, just got in with the wrong people and did the wrong things and started wandering my spiritual desert. Went into the Air Force, and I spent 20 years in the United States Air Force. I was in Vietnam. While I was in the Air, I had met a girl in New York, and I married her while I was in the Air Force in my first 2 years, after my first 2 years, and then we moved to Louisiana, and that's where we lived. And then we traveled all around the world after that. But I'm still married to that beautiful lady. It's now going to be 47 years. We have three daughters that we raised, and a granddaughter who's, you know, 20 years old now. So we've done really well. Thank you. But while I was in the desert, so to speak, I became very spiritually lost. And I didn't have God in my life. I have to tell you that I need to go back and say, where was my father and mother? My father was in the army, and he traveled around the world. And I was being raised by my grandmother, grandfather, and then my aunt and uncle. And my father would just send support checks home, you know, to take care of me. We never really had a relationship.
What about your mother?
Then I asked, when I was old enough to ask where my mother was, they said that she died in childbirth. So I always felt like I was a murderer.
Oh.
You know, and I did a lot of bad things. I probably broke all of God's Ten Commandments, I'm sure, in my life. And
we all did.
I'm sure, but I actually felt like I was a murderer, so I did that one too, and I was in Vietnam too. But so I got into alcohol. I drank and drank and drank. After Vietnam, I came back, I drank a lot, and I would drink all the time, and I became an alcoholic. And I just didn't have a good time relating to the world. I did go to work. I did pay my bills, but I just didn't function very well. And I hated everything. I hated everybody. I hated the world. I didn't have God. I felt like I was an atheist.
What about your wife? She was drinking with you or not?
She put up with it. And, you know, we went through a lot of rough times. We had a lot of hard times together. But in 1988, I had left my wife, and I was living in an apartment. And, I'm sorry, I got to go back to 1965. I was stationed in Arkansas. This is before I got married. And my father came back from overseas, and he retired from the Army, and he lived in New York City. And he sent me a letter and said, your mother who died in childbirth was looking for you. I'm very sorry that we told you that she died in childbirth.
Wow.
She's here in New York looking for you. But I won't tell her where you are, and I won't tell you where she is. I was really angry.
Oh, sure.
I searched and searched, you know, but for years trying to find my mother. I had the name on the birth certificate, but that's all. But women change their names when they get married. Couldn't find her. So that always hurt even more afterwards. So in 1988, I'm alone for my wife. It's January 2nd, the day after New Year's. It's a very depressing time for a person who's an alcoholic. But I had just started going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was trying to get well. I was trying to get sober.
So you decided by yourself?
I had, yes. Mm-hmm. I finally decided. I went and saw a counselor, and he suggested I go to AA. I started going to AA, and I'm sitting there. It's a very depressing day, January 2nd, and I get this letter in the mail. I said, I need a miracle. If there's a God and I don't believe in you, send me a miracle. Well, this letter shows up from the Social Security Administration in my mailbox. And inside the letter is another letter from the Salvation Army Missing Persons Bureau in Atlanta, Georgia. And it says, if you would like to speak to your sister, call this number. I'm an only child. I don't have a sister, just my two cousins in New York. And, you know, I speak to them all the time. So I called this number, and it was a southern voice. A man voice came on, and he said she wasn't here, but if I called back in an hour, he would go get her and bring her here. I told him who I was. In an hour, I called back, and I talked to my sister, my other sister, my other sister, my brother, my other brother, and my mother for the first time in my life. I was 41 years old. What an amazing moment that was. God had just split the Red Sea for me. Wow. You know what it's like to have a family and then get another family? I mean, that's exactly what happened. The Red Sea just opened up. That was a miracle.
Yeah, it's exactly what you want.
Yeah, but it's very hard to process when you have, now you got, I'm angry at my old family for what they did, but I'm happy I got a new family. And I don't know how to bring them all together. So I got enough money together, and I flew down to near Pensacola, Florida, near Fort Walton Beach. And that's where they were. And I met my mother for the first time in my life. I was 41 years old. It's just an exciting moment. I can't even describe it. And we spent a week together there, and I learned a lot about my family, why they split up. They actually got divorced in 1947. She was brought to New York, and she had a tough time because she was a Southern girl. And in New York, my grandmother just spoke Yiddish, and she didn't understand that. You don't speak that in the Deep South very much. So, you know, it was a very cultural thing. And so, and my mother abused me, apparently, didn't like having the baby. She was only 16 years old when I was born. So it was a tough time for her. So they threw her into an asylum or something. Mental hospital, and said that she had to sign a paper saying that she would never have anything to do with me, and he would let her out, my father. So that's what happened, and that there was a divorce. That was 1947. I mean, who gets divorced then? You know, that's a big thing back in those days. So that's what happened. I didn't know any of that until I talked to my mother. So I've got this new family. I go back to Nebraska. I'm really excited. But I'm saying, you know, maybe there's a God. Maybe he was trying to get my attention. Maybe I should go look for him. So I started going to synagogue. I went to all the synagogues here in Omaha, and very cold reception. Very cold. You know, they didn't greet newcomers or anything. They weren't very friendly to people who were outsiders. And so I said, well, you know what? I heard that if you go to church, they have a God that loves you. And I really need some love right now because I broke all of his Ten Commandments. I don't think I really want to meet this guy anyway because I'm in trouble with him.
You mean the God?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Look what I did. You know, I'm going to have to stand up there and say, I did this and this and this. And I just couldn't see doing that. So
So
I said, let me go find this God that loves me.
Yeah, not the ones that judges, yeah?
Right, yeah. They have a God that says, we love you, you know? So I started going to every church everywhere. And some were good, some were bad, but I wasn't very comfortable. You know, I saw that cross, and it just bothered me, and I just couldn't handle that. And, you know, I just couldn't handle being in a church. Finally found a church that I was comfortable in, and I stayed there for 3 years. They were happy to have me as their token Jew. But I didn't know anything about Yeshua. I just know Jesus. And, you know, I was eating pork and all that stuff. And, you know, that was okay. I was living like a Gentile. I reconciled with my wife. We got back together, remarried, actually. And everything, you know, was good there. I woke up, though, on my 42nd birthday, which was only a month after I had met my mother. I told you what happened with my nightmare. I was going to die that year. Well, I did die that year. When I got comfortable in that church, I was baptized. I went in the water and came out, and I was born again. So in order to be born again, you must die. I died, literally died, but not the way I thought it was going to be, getting run over by a beer truck or something. I died and came out a new creation. And that was an awesome thing. So my nightmare actually came true.
להתפאר דרכנו אלוהים רוצה לשכון בתוכנו אלוהים שפך עלינו את חסדו כדי שנעשה הכל למען כבודו גם עליי לחיות מה שישוע עשה גם עליי לעשות הוא הדוגמה שלי הוא חוד החנית הוא זה שבירך אותי בכל ברכה רוחנית הוא הדוגמה שלי הוא חוד החנית הוא זה שבירך אותי בכל ברכה רוחנית תמיד אשאל את עצמי מה ישוע היה עושה אילו היה במקומי הוא הדוגמה שלי הוא חוד החנית הוא זה שבירך אותי בכל ברכה רוחנית הוא הדוגמה שלי הוא חוד החנית הוא זה שבירך אותי בכל ברכה רוחנית אלוהים רוצה להתפאר דרכנו אלוהים רוצה לשכון בתוכנו אלוהים שפך עלינו את חסדו כדי שנעשה הכל למען כבודו כך גם אני אחיה מה שישוע עשה גם אני אעשה הוא הדוגמה שלי הוא חוד החנית הוא זה שבירך אותי בכל ברכה רוחנית הוא הדוגמה שלי הוא חוד החנית הוא זה שבירך אותי בכל ברכה רוחנית אתה הדוגמה שלי, אתה חוד החנית, אתה זה שבירך אותי בכל ברכה רוחנית. אתה הדוגמה שלי, אתה חוד החנית,
אתה זה שברך אותי בכל ברכה רוחנית.
You are listening to the Faithful to the Truth radio program. And our guest today is Rabbi Nate Saddleback here in Omaha. Rabbi Nate, so you were telling us about how you became a new believer. Right. Did you really have a change in your heart that was very obvious?
Well, when I started going to this church, I didn't know anything. I never read the Bible in my whole life. I was never been involved in that except, you know, through Hebrew school when I was young. And I asked the pastor, and the pastor had witnessed to me that, and I was getting, you know, kind of getting to believe in Jesus through the pastor and the way he talked to me and all. But I said, what do I read in the Bible? And he said, well, read the New Testament. There's nothing in the Old Testament.
Nothing in the Old Testament. What do you mean nothing? Nothing that can help you?
That's what he said.
Oh, okay.
So I started with Matthew and I worked my way through. But as I'm reading the books, I'm seeing, hey, this isn't right. Why are we celebrating Christmas? Why are we doing this? His name is Barabbas. That means Bar Abba. You know, I knew from Hebrews, the Hebrew stuff I learned in Hebrew school was coming back to me. So I was starting to associate it in a Jewish way, but I never was able to pick up on it. The church was having problems, and they broke up. And as I'm leaving the church for the last time, I said, I'm never coming back to church. I was really upset with the way everything happened. There's a sign on the bulletin board, a poster. It says, if you would like to buy rubber stamps, write to Jews for Jesus in San Francisco, California. You know, that's what the sign said. And I said, Jews for Jesus, that's an oxymoron. I couldn't believe in that. But I wrote to them, and they wrote me back a letter from California, and they put me in touch with a Gentile here in Omaha. And I went to see him, and I studied with him for 3 years to learn how to be Messianic.
Wow.
And he taught me everything. And I finally went to a Messianic conference in Dallas, Texas, and it was just awesome. And I felt right at home.
Yeah.
I said, I'm home, and I found it. And it was just an amazing experience. And so I just reveled in that. But I didn't have any place to go when I got back here. So I didn't know what to do. So I was driving to work one day. I had a secular job with the state of Nebraska. And I'm driving to work and I'm saying, God, I really need something to do for you. I'm just not doing anything. And he said, well, why don't you create this 12-week course and talk to Gentile churches, go to try to get into their Sunday schools and teach them about their Jewish roots. I said, yeah, I could do that. I started smiling. And as I'm doing that, I'm driving right by one of the synagogues here in town. So that was a sign from God that, you know, wow, that happened right there at the synagogue. So by the time I got to work, I had the whole outline of the course written in my head. And I started teaching it. Some lady called me a week later and said, can you teach that course you're preparing? I said, what course? Nobody knows about it. She said, well, we heard about it. I said, from who? Well, I don't know. We just heard about it because I had never told anybody except my wife. And so I started teaching the course as I'm still writing the course. And I got to teach it. And I was teaching it for a couple of years. And then these two doctors came down from Sioux City, Iowa, and they said, you know, you guys need to have a congregation here in Omaha. I said, yeah, that's a good idea. They said, well, why don't you come out to dinner with us and we'll talk about it. So we're out there, and they're saying, you know, we should have a Messianic congregation in Omaha. I said, yeah, that's a good idea. You should. I'm teaching this class, and people are wondering where to go. And they said, well, they need a congregation to go to because they're starting to believe what you're teaching them. I said, well, that's a good thing. Go ahead and start a congregation. I'll be glad to come. And they said, well, we need a leader. I said, yeah, you probably need a leader. They said, well, he should be Jewish. I said, yeah, he probably should be Jewish. I hope you find somebody. And they all looked at me. I said, I'm the only Jew at the table. No, I'm teaching this class. I'm fine. I don't want to do that. And I kind of got roped into this. But as I started doing it, I loved it. And it just came.
Who were those two men?
They were two doctors, a man and a woman who were doctors.
Oh.
And they're no longer here. But they actually started this congregation for us.
So they helped financially.
They helped financially. They even were able to get us the Torah that we have. And you know, it's just been amazing. You know, they were just here for a time. And now they're gone, and we've been able to carry on. And we've been worshiping now for 20 years. In August, it'll be 20 years. Our congregation is called Adat HaTikvat Zion, the Hope of Zion Congregation. We worship every Saturday at 10 a.m., and we've been doing that for 20 years. We have a cantor who is a Gentile, who you couldn't tell was a Gentile. You'd think he was Jewish the way he sings. He's so beautiful. And we've been together for 20 years now.
So what is the website that people can maybe find you?
If you want to find us, and we do live stream our services, so the whole world gets to watch us every Saturday, every Shabbat, it's www.adatadat.org. So it's .adat.org.
And you also have your own website, yeah?
That is our website.
Okay, yes. Can you say it again? So it's www?
www, all websites are that, .adat, so it's .adat, and then .org.
Okay.
Yes, and that's our website. You could watch us on live stream there.
That's amazing.
And also, a lot of my teachings are on there now, so you can download those. I think my testimony's on there in a video format, too.
Protect our sons, for we acknowledge Listening to the Faithful to the Truth radio show, and we are continuing with Rabbi Nate Seidelbach. Rabbi, can you please tell us more about the Seidelbach family?
Well, sure. Remember, I told you I already found my mother and my half brothers and half sisters, so I already have two families, so to speak. And the other thing was that when I asked my family about our name, they always told me that when my grandfather or somebody arrived at Ellis Island, that the name was changed to something else, because we never knew anybody else. We were always like the only people named Seidelbach. And he said that the name was changed by the Irish immigration officer that processed them to the Seidelbach. And we were stuck with that. Well, in 1990, close to 98, this was 10 years after I'd found my mother, and my daughter comes running in. We had just gotten this new thing called email. And she said, "You need to go see this email, Dad." And I went to see it. And it's from a guy named Gil Seidelbach in Israel. And wanted to know if we were related. Had the same exact name that we had. And I said, "Wow." So I started telling him about who my grandfather was, all the names and stuff. And I sent it to him. And he came back and said that we were cousins. And he sent me an entire family tree with my family on it. And I said, "This is amazing. I didn't know there were other Seidelbachs in the whole world." And it just turned out that I was going to Israel that year for the first time. My wife and I had saved enough money to go. And that was going to be our first trip. And so we went on a messianic tour with Neil and Jamie Lash. And we extended it for 3 days to visit our family. They lived in Haifa. And they had got there in 1936, and my cousin, who is about my age, he makes apartment buildings. That's what he does. He constructs apartment buildings. And so he put us up for 3 days, and we got to meet our entire family. One of our family members is Natan Zak, who is a great poet that lives in Israel. I think he's a professor at Tel Aviv. And so we got to meet our entire family in Israel. It was such an amazing experience. And that was in 1998. And I always think back again, God is working in my life, because 1998 is 50 years after Israel became a country, 1948 to 1998. And so that would make it the Jubilee year of Israel. And what does God do in the Jubilee year to families? He brings them back to their land, and they all come together. Isn't that what they do? And yeah. So he did that for me. Another miracle in my life. And then I get home and I'm getting letters from all around the world, from people in France, 600 names, Seidelbach, people in Australia, who I now communicate with on Facebook, and people in Canada, and even in the United States, even in Brooklyn where I lived, I had two aunts that told me a lot of stories about why we were the only Seidelbachs. I can make a movie out of that, and it's pretty sad, but we were kind of shunned by the rest of the family and cut off because of some incident, which I'd rather not talk about today.
Sure.
But it's just been an amazing journey in my life. I mean, how many families can a person get? And what do you do with all that?
So you said you had four mothers, yeah?
I had four mothers raising me. My two aunts, my grandmother, and my stepmother. My stepmother is my father married a Japanese lady. She's 94 years old now. She lives in New Jersey. I'm her only friend. I call her every day. I talk to her because I figured that's the way you honor your father after he died, is what do you do? And, you know, my father and I never really got along, but she's turned out to be an awesome lady. She was a survivor of Nagasaki, the bomb. She's the daughter of a samurai. She wrote a book called Nagasaki Woman. Her name is Akiko Seidelbach. If you want to buy it, you can go online and get it. It's amazing. My whole life has just been amazing, and God has been moving in my life, and he never quits.
Hallelujah. And today you are the rabbi of a big congregation.
Right.
And
And I wandered a desert for 40 years, and I didn't think I was worthy of anything, you know. I was the kind of person you would step over on the street who was laying there, you know.
Wow.
The drunk in the gutter.
Hallelujah.
But God picked me up, and look at what he's done. And I just love working for God. I just love doing what I'm doing. It's not even a job. It's my whole life now. You know, it's just been amazing. I'm like in my 70s, and I'm still doing this. And
okay,
I still got enough energy.
Yeah, we continue. We would like to repeat one more time your website. So it's www.adat.org.
Org.
And Adat, you spell A-D-A-T.
Correct.
Okay, so if you would like to connect with Rabbi Nate, you can connect through Facebook or through this website.
Right, I'm on Facebook as Rav, R-A-V, Nate Seidelbach.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Faithful to the Truth radio show, and we are continuing with Rabbi Nate Seidelbach. Rabbi, can you tell us how you think the Messianic movement is in process?
Well, you know, the Messianic movement was in the first century existed, and Rabbi Paul and the apostles and those people kind of died off after so many years, and the Gentiles just came in and took over, and then there was a resurgence of the Messianic movement in around 1972, I guess, in California, with Jews for Jesus starting up, and all of a sudden a lot more Messianic congregations are rising up all over. I think this is a great movement of God around the world. You know, I don't know how many congregations. I know our organization, the MJAA, the IAMCS, has over 160 congregations that are members. And I know there's other groups that have lots of member congregations. So there's a lot of congregations growing all over. Here in Omaha, there are not a lot of Jews who believe in Yeshua.
You said it's 7,000.
There's 7,000 Jews, but they don't believe in Yeshua. Uh-huh. I mean, I might be the only Jew. I know there's Jews that go to churches. I know that there are Jews who believe in Yeshua, but they don't come here. And so we have very few Jewish people in our congregation. So it's mostly Gentiles who have come from different churches and different backgrounds that want to be part of Israel. They read the book of Romans, they read, and it says you're supposed to be grafted in. You're supposed to, if you're born again, you're saved, you're to be grafted into the olive tree. And the olive tree is Israel, we know that. Also, there were branches that were cut off the olive tree, the Jews who did not believe. And so some of them, I was a Jew who did not believe. Then I started believing. So I must have been put back on the tree as a branch. And you know, so the olive tree is composed of Jews and Gentiles who believe in Yeshua. And, you know, I also believe that Israel was given a job by God at Mount Sinai. And it says to you in Exodus 19:6, you're to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. That means that they were to go out and be the priests for the nations, to teach them all about God and his ways and to show them. Israel never did that. I try to do that here. As a Messianic rabbi, I believe I'm trying to fulfill Exodus 19:6. I'm trying to be the priest that teaches the rest of the world. That's why I teach that 12-week course on Jewish roots. That's why I do all those things. That's why I encourage, and I encourage Gentiles to do things. You know, we have I'm the Jew. We have a Gentile who's our cantor. And so we used to go out on the road as the Jew and the Gentile. And my wife would flip the overhead slides in them days. And so we had, our show was called The Jew, the Gentile, and the Overhead. And we would go to different churches and you know, witness. And we're trying to show them that, you know, they need to accept their Jewish roots and become part of Israel. That the church is not a separate thing that God created. It's he only created one thing. And it's not Jewish holidays that we're supposed to celebrate. If you read Leviticus 23, those are God's holy days. Those are his appointed times, his moedim. It's not something that Jewish people just do. It's for everyone. And so those are the things that we try to teach. We try to break down the wall. I think that's what the Messianic movement is about. It's that end time movement. And I think it's the biggest movement of God. He's preparing everybody for the end times with the Messianics. We break down that wall and bring them Gentiles and them Jews together. And that's what I think our goal is. And Gentiles are to make Jews jealous, according to Romans 11:11, right?
Right.
I don't have to make Jews jealous. I just have to tell Gentiles, hey, you got to go out and make somebody jealous. That's not my job.
No, but we still need to.
I know we need to witness the Jews ourselves, but I'm just trying to get Gentiles to get into action. That's what I'm trying to do. And to accept their Jewish roots and become part of Israel. And that's the goal of the Messianic movement.
So when they are on the tree, like we are all the same, correct?
Correct. There is neither Jew nor Gentile, according to Galatians 3:28, neither male nor female. But that doesn't mean that there aren't men and women. There are men and women. There are Jews and Gentiles. But I think we all become something else.
So who we become?
I don't know. You have to ask God that. I think we become His people.
I think we become one.
We become echad.
One. We become His body.
We become echad. You know.
Echad. Yeah.
What does Genesis 2:24 say? Therefore, man shall leave his mother and father and cling to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. I think that's what Galatians 3:28 is all about.
We become one with the Creator. Yeah.
That's correct. I think it's the same verse as Genesis 2:24.
So, like some people, for example, in Israel especially, and even all over the places, they would tell you, "Oh, now you Jew believe in Jesus, you are not a Jew anymore." What would you say about that?
Well, I of course I don't believe that. I believe that I'm completed as a Jew. I'm fulfilled. I didn't convert to anything. I am a Jewish believer, and there are Gentile believers. But I believe that we are believers, and you know we have not converted to anything. I hate to use the term Christianity. It's not the proper term. So I like to say believers.
So some people would say, but. You became, believer in Yeshua, and now you...
They would say that, yeah. Jewish people
Why you want to keep this Jewish? Why it's important for you to still say, I'm a Jew, believing in Yeshua? Like, I know I'm a Jew, I understand, but I wanted to hear you what you would say.
Because I always look back to the first century and what did they do? What did the Jewish believers do in the first century? Rabbi Paul... Peter, all those people, they always went to the temple in Jerusalem. They brought the tithes and offerings there. They always did the Jewish things. They observed Shabbat. They observed all the holy days. You know, he went three times a year, Jerusalem. Paul did. He always did those things. He did Jewish things. So why shouldn't I? I'm just the same as him.
Yeah, what would Yeshua do?
What would WWYD? Yeah. Yeshua would not be sitting there coloring Easter eggs. That's for sure.
Yeah.
That's the man I follow. And I believe in him. And he is a Jewish man. He was Jewish in the first century. He was Jewish when he died. He was Jewish when he rose. And you know when he comes back? He's not coming back to Tulsa or Dallas or Rome to run a religious establishment. He's coming back to Jerusalem and he's going to stand on the Mount of Olives. And... why do you think all those Jewish people are buried up there in those tombs on the top of the Mount of Olives? They know the Messiah is coming, and they know. They know. They may not say it, but I think they know who he is. I just pray that. We hear that a lot. Sometimes rabbis will say things, and, you know.
Hallelujah.
Baruch Hashem.
So we really thank you, Rabbi Nate, to be here on our show today. We really appreciate everything you shared, and thank you so much. We are going to hear another song, and thank you so much for listening to our program. Shalom, shalom.
חדרי ליבי בקודש קודשי נפשי מזמין אותך אדון לבקר ולנצח נצחים להישאר
אתה הרת משכנים דברך אהלל ואשיר לכבודך המלא את רוחי בתהילה פרבו לפניך בתפילה
הבא בשם אדוני לו יהי שמך מבורך
אתה אדוני כל יכול
אתה אלוהים גדול
אפתח את דלתות ליבי רק לך אדוני אהובי כי אתה מכיר אותי באמת אני שלך לעולם ועד שם אדוני לו יהי שמך מבורך ברוך הבא בשם אדוני לא יהי שמך מבורך אתה אדוני כל יכול
אתה אלוהים גדול
בקשת את חנאי ליבי בקדושה והשלום שמני
או אבא אלוהים God of Israel, you're so good. May your name be glorified. We love you and we praise you. Baruch Ata Adonai.
Baruch Ata Adonai.
Please invite us to your congregation, and we would love to come worship with you in English, Russian, Hebrew, and Spanish.
And I would be so delighted to share with you my powerful and encouraging testimony.
Please visit our website, oxanasite.com, oxanasite.com.
Please contact us by email, faithfultothetruth@gmail.com.